Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for coming for this session. I'm Dr. Laurie Elam Evans. I'm an epidemiologist and lead health scientist at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, currently working with the National Immunization Survey. And we're so glad that you've come to this session on epidemiologic capacity and surveillance. We're still waiting for one speaker. So when they come, they're supposed to be the last one. So we'll get that presentation loaded. But what we'll do is have our first two speakers, they will make their presentation. We'll take a few questions at the end after each speaker, and then we'll bring them back at the end and you can ask any additional questions that you might have, okay? All right. No, don't all speak at once now. Okay. So our first presentation is going to be validation of secondhand smoke exposure, self-reported measures, and identification of associations of secondhand smoke exposures with respiratory symptoms. That's a mouthful. It's going to be presented by Henry Alano. He's with the Department of Public Health Sciences, University of Miami Miller School of Medicine in Miami, Florida, and with the Bureau of Epidemiology, Florida Department of Health in Tallahassee. Please join me in welcoming Henry Alano to the presentation.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Again, my name is Henry Alano. I'm a second-year MPH student at the University of Miami. I'd like to take a second to acknowledge my co-authors. I'd also like to say that none of our co-authors had any conflict of interest in this project. So about half of the population of the United States is covered by comprehensive clean air, indoor air legislation. And even further, Florida only has a partial clean air indoor legislation. We have previously reported that young adults in Florida are exposed in bars, motor vehicles, and the workplace to secondhand smoke, and that these exposures are associated with respiratory symptoms. Also, some national data has suggested that adults in the U.S. continue to be exposed to secondhand smoke. In our study, we collaborated with the Florida Department of Health to conduct a fallback study of participants from the 2010 through 2012 Florida BRFSS in order to do two things. First, to validate self-reported secondhand smoke exposure measures using biomarkers, including hair nicotine and saliva quinine. Hair nicotine is usually used for longer exposure to secondhand smoke, and saliva quinine is used for recent, in the past few days, exposure to secondhand smoke. We also examined the associations between secondhand smoke exposures and self-reported respiratory symptoms. So in the recruitment phase of our study, we received a list of possible participants from the Florida Department of Health. We contacted all the possible participants, and we sent anyone that was interested in participating a biomarker collection kit and schedule an interview. Our study sample ended up including 263 individuals. All of who had agreed to be recontacted after completing the BRFSS in 2010, 2011, or 2012. They all self-reported to be non-smokers, 18 years or older, and they all spoke either English, Spanish, or both. Once they agreed to be part of our study, we sent them a collection kit, including the necessary tools to collect about 5 milliliters of saliva and 30 to 50 strands of hair that was at least 1 inch long. We also sent them the informed consent and a reminder of the scheduled interview. The day of the actual interview, we first made sure that they were in fact non-smokers. We asked them if they had smoked cigarettes, cigars, or pipes in the past 3 months. And if they hadn't, then we continued with the actual interview, which was 20 to 30 minutes long, It assessed smoking history, current and childhood secondhand smoke exposure, their attitudes towards smoking, and respiratory symptoms and conditions. So after the interview, we went ahead and guided them through the sample collection process. And once we received the samples over the mail, we stored them in a negative 20 degree freezer until we could send them off to the Department of Health to be analyzed. Out of the close to 2,700 people we contacted, we interviewed 365 and had sufficient samples for analysis from 263. Here's an example of the demographics of our study population. This is from the 2010 population. As you can see, compared to the Florida BRFSS population, our study sample had higher proportions of retired people, of women, of people with a university or higher degree, and they had significantly smaller proportion of Hispanics. When it comes to the concentration of biomarkers in our sample, about 35% of our study population had hair nicotine concentrations less than the level of detection of 0.05 nanograms per milligram, and saliva cotinine, about 70% of our population had a concentration that was less than the level of detection of 0.05 nanograms per milliliter. There was a moderate correlation between nicotine and cotinine. That might have been done to the differential concentrations in the study sample. As you can see, we also calculated the correlation between self-reported measures and the biomarker measures for secondhand smoke exposure. And it seems that the best correlation happens between the biomarkers and the self-reported smoke exposure in the past 3 months. Although it's important to note that none of the correlations are very high. We also assess the agreement between self-report and biomarker measures. We use Kappa statistics to do so. And as you can see, the Kappa statistics for the hair nicotine measure versus the different self-report measures are all very similar and low. There was also no agreement found between self-report measures and the saliva indicator or cotinine, and no agreement between the self-report measures and the combination of saliva and hair indicators. Finally, we assessed the possible associations between all the different secondhand smoke exposure measures and self-reported respiratory symptoms. As you can see from this example, we have three examples of the best associations. In all the four different measure categories, people that were exposed to secondhand smoke exposure tend to have higher prevalences of shortness of breath, and that association is significant in among people that were exposed according to the saliva measure or the self-report measure. There is a similar trend going on with the coughing association. Again, the prevalences of those exposed to secondhand smoke exposure are larger than those who are not exposed, and the significant associations are found in saliva and self-report. And finally, with the wheezing association, we see the similar trend, but this time you see the hair and saliva combined measure is also significant. The study limitations were mostly due to the fact that we were not there to help the participants collect their own biological samples. It was done remotely. So we weren't sure if participants were collecting their own hair and their own saliva, or if they were doing it right after the interview. So our whole time frame might have been shifted if the participants waited a few days. Also, during shipping, sometimes the samples got lost or took longer than others, so there was no way for us to control that. Also, the response rate was impacted because some people did not feel comfortable collecting their own samples, or sometimes by the end of the interview they would decide that they no longer wanted to collect their samples. The strength of our study include the fact that it's a follow-back survey of the Florida BRFSS that gives us a lot of more data to work with for each participant, including demographics. The fact that we use two separate biomarkers, we could assess validity with two different biomarkers. And the questions we used in our survey all are valid questions that came from previous studies and have been validated. In conclusion, despite the collection challenges, collection of biomarkers remotely is feasible in a diverse population of adults, but may result in reduced associations because of shifted time frames of sampling. And studies of the health effects of secondhand smoke exposure should collect and analyze saliva, nicotine, or hair cutting samples in order to better estimate exposure levels, since self-reported measures do not seem to be very valid. Any questions? Well, if we look at the chart of the sampling, as you see, we contacted a lot of people, and only 263 were able to provide us with sufficient samples. And also, you do have to take your time with people when you're on the phone helping them collect the samples, because sometimes they're nervous about it. Sometimes they have questions as to what the sample's actually going to be used for. Sometimes they think you might use their DNA or something out of it. So you got to explain all of that to them. So
some people who may have, at what point do you ask them for the biomarkers?
Well, we explain to them that we will be collecting the biomarkers during the interview, the first time we contact them. And then we ask them to actually collect the biomarkers after the phone interview. That's a good question. My PI is here.
The answer is no. There hasn't been any attempt to adjust the BRFSS weight at this stage of the analysis what we're considering.
And one more suggestion. We need to do that. And the second one we need to do is campaigns at one point of time this doesn't impact. So basically, it would be nice to compare so the limitation of BRFSS
thank you.
And he didn't announce himself. This is Dr. Oliver Hope.
Yeah, thank you for your input.
Any other questions? What kind of suggestions would you have for other states who want to do something similar to this? Be careful.
Just account for the fact that this takes a lot of time to actually get a sizable sample. Actually, a lot of a good amount of our participants lived in rural areas in Florida, and we could tell because I had to ship the samples to the different places. So we did have a good amount of rural, and we also had a good amount of urban. So.
Well, thank you.